From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. A decade-long trend toward U.S. air travel consolidation took another big step, the biggest, last week, with the announced merger of American Airlines and U.S. Airways to make what would be the biggest air carrier in the world. Is that good for air travelers? Bad for air travelers? And how will it change flying? This hour on Point, giants in the sky and what it means for you, your legroom, your airfares, your options. You can join the conversation. What do you see coming here? What have you seen so far as major carriers have combined and combined? What's it take to be a savvy traveler now? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. American Airlines and U.S. Airways, they would be combined under the name American Airlines. Want you to know, if it all goes through, it will be great. Here's the word they're putting out in a new commercial released on the day of the announcement last week.
It's time to make a change. It's time to become better versions of ourselves. To be greater than expected, and more than you hope for. So starting now, we begin a new chapter. One written in passion and skill, ambition and sweat. One where two companies take the best of themselves to create something better.
Greater than you expected and more than you could hope for. Not everybody's so sure. Here's Mike Gaynor, Pittsburgh traveler, worrying that mergers will make it more difficult to afford to fly with his family.
Prices for the airlines are high enough already, more than I've ever experienced in my life. Just to travel with a family of four could cost you, easily $2,000.
So what will it mean for American air travelers? Joining us first today from Dallas, Texas, is Mary Schlangenstein, airline reporter for Bloomberg News, covering the merger between U.S. Air and American. Mary, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Why'd they do it?
They did it because they needed the scale to compete with United, Continental, and Delta. Those had both grown in size through mergers and had passed American by. American was a distant number three. U.S. Airways was number five in terms of size in the U.S. industry. And they really needed, American needed the scale to get bigger to compete effectively.
Delta and Northwest, of course, joined in 2008, United and Continental in 2010, what Southwest even purchased AirTran in 2011. What about on the trust, antitrust side? Is there any doubt that this will be approved, get a green light? Could it be stopped by the government?
There's really not any doubt. They have very little overlap. CEO Doug Parker of U.S. Airways said last week that they had over 900 combined routes. They only had 12 on which they overlapped. And the expectation is if they have to divest anything to gain antitrust approval, it would be some flight slots out of Washington Reagan where that combined they will have about 67% of the departures.
Combined, they'll also have... in total, I read here, 6,700 flights a day on more than 600 planes to 336 cities, 56 countries. Paint the geography of their current kind of domains, American versus U.S. Air. Where's American big? Where does it fly out of the most? And two, how does it, if it overlaps with U.S. Airways so little currently, what does that map look like, Mary?
Well, AMR, American, has five domestic hubs. And they have a huge hub in Dallas and, of course, at JFK in New York, which is an international departure spot for them. They also have Miami, Chicago, and LAX in Los Angeles. So they were focused primarily sort of eastern U.S., basically with Miami and New York being hopping off places to international flights. U.S. Airways has Phoenix as a hub, larger hubs in Charlotte and in Philadelphia. And so, and they also have D.C. as a focus city. So there's not a lot of overlap there. And U.S. Airways' argument was that they basically filled a gap in American system. And it was that they didn't really have a connecting hub on the East Coast. So they didn't have any way to gather a lot of passengers and fly them across the country. They could get you to New York. They could get you to Miami. But they primarily would take you across the Atlantic or to the Caribbean from there. So U.S. Airways' argument was, you know, we can provide these connecting hubs. We can gather more domestic traffic and we can feed them across the country better.
What are they saying about how long this merger is likely to take? How long will we see U.S. Airways and American Airlines, you know, planes still both out there with their painted wings?
Well, they expect a third quarter closing just on the merger agreement itself. It has to be approved by American's bankruptcy court. They are in bankruptcy now, and of course, it has to be approved by the court. And then they'll have to get regulatory approval, and the U.S. Airways shareholders will have to approve it. And so they expect really about 18 months of full integration after the closing of the merger.
Where will the new headquarters be?
They'll stay headquartered in Fort Worth, Texas, which is just south of DFW Airport, which is American's huge hub here. It will keep the name American. The folks from U.S. Airways will close their Tempe headquarters, Tempe, Arizona, and move it to Fort Worth. They say they will try to maintain a large presence in Tempe, but, of course, details of that haven't been worked out yet.
And what about these hubs? Will some of these hubs no longer be active as hubs for the combined airline?
Well, they're saying now that because there's so little overlap, that they plan to maintain all of their hubs. That would be eight hubs. And they plan to maintain all of those. They say they have so many flights and so many routes, they're going to need them all. Now, as you probably know, in the past mergers, they often said, we won't close any hubs. But we've seen a number of hubs close, even though the airline said they wouldn't. You know, Memphis scaled down. St. Louis disappeared as a hub for TWA. So that has happened in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm. What about pricing? People look at this and say they're going to have an awful lot of market dominance here. I mean, there'll be something like 86% of all flights out of Dallas-Fort Worth, 78% of all flights out of Philly, 60% out of Washington's National, 92% of all flights out of Charlotte. Does that mean prices inevitably go up?
Well, they may go up in markets where they have, like Charlotte, for example, which is a U.S. Airways hub, and they pretty much control that market. So they could go up there. The top four, which will be, you know, the three big combined airlines, American, United, Delta, plus Southwest, will have about 88% market share across the United States. So, you know, that remains to be seen to some extent. Now, Doug Parker, again, the U.S. Airways CEO, is saying
Who will take over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sorry. He'll be CEO of the combined airline. Mm-hmm. He says you'll have three major airlines, but they will be rational, which means they won't, use really low pricing that actually destroys the industry and hurts the industry. But they'll also be highly competitive. And I think when it comes to business travel, that's where the most competition is expected on prices.
What about culture? Merging these two, what are the current reputations of U.S. Airways and American Airlines, and how do those go together?
Well, American Airlines has really had a troubled past when it comes to labor relationships, and that hasn't changed under CEO Tom Horton. He became CEO when they filed for bankruptcy in November 2011. And, of course, he had to negotiate concessions and ended up getting over $1 billion in concessions from employees to help restructure their costs. Doug Parker sort of early on went behind Horton's back and courted the American unions. And he gained their support in April of 2012 for a merger. He actually got them to sign tentative contracts that would be put into effect.
Amazing.
So he gained that support, which was extremely important. And he learned that lesson when they tried to merge with Delta back in 2007. And that was a failed hostile attempt. He knew hostile wouldn't work anymore. And so he got their backing. And then he built some support from other parties like the bondholders in the bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
American employees are really looking for a change in culture. They really want a new airline. And that's one reason that Parker was chosen to be CEO of the combined airline. They really want a new start.
Mary, what about the flying culture, the consumer-facing culture and experience that these two airlines have historically provided?
Well, American, they lost billions and billions of dollars over about the last 5 years that led up to their bankruptcy filing. And they admit that they didn't have the money to put into their product during that time. And so they're sort of playing catch up now. They're adding a lot of new services and new products. They're improving their aircraft, and they're buying a lot of new aircraft. They have 460 new planes on order, including 42 of the Dreamliners from Boeing.
Once they fixed up and back in the air.
Right. Yeah. And so they really are set to try to improve their onboard product, their in-flight product.
That's the machinery. What about the attitude, the comparison of the two? How do you characterize those toward the flyer?
Well, I think that probably varies quite a bit from flight to flight. You know, they have a lot of dedicated employees, a lot of employees that work very hard, and they really are intent on seeing their airline succeed. I think the U.S. Airways employees have expressed that they are looking forward to being part of a bigger airline. They are looking forward to their pay being brought up to industry standard. And the American employees, especially their union leaders, have said that they believe this is the shot in the arm that they need to become competitive.
They'll be the biggest in the world. They'll be the biggest in the U.S. How will American, the new combined merged American, stack up against Delta and United?
Well, they'll be smaller than Delta and United in terms of passenger traffic, which is miles flown by paying passengers. That's an industry standard measure.
Okay.
And so they're going to be quite a bit larger. They're going to have 948 aircraft just in their main jet fleets, and they're going to have about 94,000 employees. So they're going to be a pretty big behemoth, and they'll be larger by quite a bit.
What do you think for Americans? What's your guess overall? Does this mean a better flying experience, a more expensive flying experience, worse experience because there's less competition?
Well, you know, Gordon Bethune, who was CEO of Continental, said the good thing about consolidation is there's one less idiot in the room. And what he meant by that was, you know, fewer people to do destructive pricing. And we'll just have to see how the competitive game plays out.
Destructive pricing, I guess that all depends where you stand, at least in part where you stand. Mary Schlangenstein with Bloomberg News in Dallas, where American Airlines in its merged big mega form will be headquartered. Thanks so much for being with us, Mary. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about the merger of American Airlines and U.S. Airways, the creation of the world's biggest airline, the huge consolidation of U.S. air carriers, and what it means for flying, for schedules, for routes, for you. At Thursday's merger announcement, U.S. Airways CEO, who will be the new American Airlines CEO once it's all gone through, said the new airline will benefit the company, employees, and travelers.
This merger is about the opportunity to grow revenues by combining networks, which also means more opportunities for employees as the combined airline flies more people to more places. We'll be able to offer good jobs and great opportunities as a stronger airline. And together, we'll provide a path for improved compensation and benefits, more places for our people to fly to, and a more secure future for all of our employees.
Well, passengers on all sides of this. Here's a Beverly Christiana flying out of Washington, not sold on the idea of consolidation among the airlines.
I don't necessarily think it's a good thing. I think the merger, for example, between United and Continental was a disaster.
And here's traveler Cheryl Martin, former American Airlines employee flying out of Alaska, saying she thinks it'll be great.
I think it'll offer more options for the passengers to be able to fly to some of the more hubs.
Let's talk to some people who follow these things very, very closely. With us right now from Washington is Charlie Leoka. He's director of the Consumer Travel Alliance, member of the Department of Transportation's Advisory Committee on Aviation Consumer Protection, TSA's Advisory Subcommittee on Consumers. Charlie, thanks very much for being with us today.
Glad to be here.
And with us from Washington, Ben Mutzabah. He's USA Today aviation editor and editor of the Today in the Sky blog at usatoday.com. Ben, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Charlie, first to you. What's your bottom line on this one? Good for air travelers or not?
My bottom line is I don't see anything good for consumers. I've been trying to think of what the good thing would be for consumers out of this, and I can't find it. We're going to have less competition. That means that prices are going to be going up. We can't fix that. We already hear the executives talking about right-sizing the aircraft. And consumer speak, that means they're going to put more people on the planes and try to match their planes to their capacity better. So all in all, I'm a normal flyer with U.S. Airways, and my world is going to be upended. I'm losing my partners' airlines, such as United. I'm losing a lot of destinations, especially in the Orient, as a frequent flyer for the future. And I'm going to have to go through a merger of the central reservation systems, which have been absolute hell for the people in United and Continental. And it's probably going to be the same when they try to put together American and U.S. Airways. And I ask my question, why? What's in it for me? Nothing.
Explain a couple of those things. You lose flights to the Far East. Why?
Well, the new airline where you put together U.S. Airways and American Airlines, you lose the really good Orient flights, which they have currently in their airline alliances with United Airlines, with Lufthansa, and so on.
So international and national partners, it'll be peeled off once they've gone big with American.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so what they're giving to consumers on one hand, when they say we're giving you more destinations, they're taking away with the other hand. So on balance, it's a wash for consumers.
Ben, how do you read it?
You know, there is always a trade-off on that. I do have to say, you know, they are – U.S. Airways customers will lose United and some of those customers. But on the other hand, they're going to gain a partner with American and Cathay Pacific, which is the biggest carrier in Hong Kong. So, you know, you lose United's flights to Tokyo, you gain Cathay Pacific's flights to Hong Kong. So, you know, it is going to be a bit of a trade-off. The Star Alliance, which U.S. Airways belongs to, is bigger than Oneworld. But, you know, Oneworld isn't without its advantages as well. So I don't take quite as dim a view on the merger. I kind of feel like as a consumer, this actually makes me more likely to consider a U.S. Airways and American, a merged airline. To me, I feel like it makes them a better value proposition than Delta.
Explain that. Why?
Well, you know, because they'll be able to go more places. You know, I know that Charlie looked at the other side of that, but right now American is a little weak in Asia. They're a little weak in Europe. They fly to some places. U.S. Airways will add some new destinations. And for U.S. Airways, which is the biggest airline at my home airport, this will add options, albeit connecting ones to Latin America that don't currently exist on U.S. Airways. You have to use their partners to do it. And if Doug Parker is to be believed, and I do in fact believe him on this point, he says that the extra revenue that a combined airline will have will give him the ability to upgrade U.S. Airways product to something that more close to what American offers. And I just think it's going to make the airline as a whole a better product. You know, the sum of the parts will be more – the whole will be more than the sum of the parts.
When you say upgrade the product, do you mean the actual airplanes will be newer planes or something else, Ben?
I think it's going to be across the board. Of course, they're going to be the new airplanes, the 460 that Mary referenced. They're still going to be part of the new airline as part of the merger. But also, American just rolled out its new flagship first class and business class service. And, you know, on par from coach to first class, I think American service is probably a touch nicer than U.S. Airways. And Parker has said he's going to try to emulate what American has because he'll now have the revenue that will allow him to invest in the product and make it nicer. And that's everything from frequent flyer programs to the newness of the planes to refitting the interiors with a nicer, more modern product.
Ben, Charlie, let's hear from our listeners. Rick in Charleston, South Carolina. Rick, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm calling because here in Charleston, we're a rather small market, and we've seen low-cost airlines come and go over the past decade, and every time an airline would come in, like Independence, then it was AirTran, we'd see our airfares double. And this is, you know, primarily hurting the leisure traveler, which is huge for the Charleston market.
Sure.
And I just think it's bad for leisure travelers, which I know is not the bread and butter of airlines, but I'm really sad.
Rick, explain why. When did you see fares go up? When people came in, when they left, when there were fewer carriers? What drove up fares in your experience there?
When there were fewer carriers, we had quite a while ago when Independence Air existed, they were the first low-cost airline to come into Charleston. We saw fares probably drop by 30, 40%. Then, of course, they went bankrupt because they didn't have a good working model, I guess. And we saw airs back, you know, getting in and out of Charleston went from maybe 275 to 475.
Wow. So it really mattered in terms of Charleston. And, of course, you've got a lot of interest in those leisure traveling tourists coming in there. Everybody's thinking about fares here and what this will mean across the board, not just, of course, with this airline. But, Rick, let me hold that thought for a moment. Get one more. Cisco's calling from Stillwater, Oklahoma. Hi, Cisco. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to point out, as much as I like competition with industry, the airline has shown a propensity for suicidal pricing competitions. Pan Am tried to cut prices low and slough security, and they paid for it during the terrorist incidents, especially with 103. TWA, I had a relative who was a high-ranking executive there, and they tried desperately to spin themselves as a success story, and they priced themselves out of existence. And now we've got a merger between two airlines, one of which is in bankruptcy court that needs approval of a federal judge for the merger.
Right.
I'm all for competition. I appreciate that. But the airline industry has just shown they're willing to cut their own throats.
Well,
so I'm not saying do away with competition,
yeah.
But they need to behave.
Right. Truth in both observations there from Cisco and from our Charleston caller. Charlie, let me bring it to you. I mean, everybody looks at this and says, what is to keep these remaining big three plus Southwest? Southwest may be kind of on its own beam here, but what's going to knock prices down when you've got fewer, you know, options out there? On the other hand, people have experienced what happens when airlines, as our Stillwater caller says, cut their own throats. That can be ugly, too. What do you say, Charlie?
Well, I just think that the airlines need to be rational. First of all, you're talking to the wrong people if you think that I'm going to say that I think prices will go down when we consolidate the airlines. Once we eliminate competition of one additional airline, we're going from 5 to 4 now. That's 20% of the market will be disappearing. And the way that the airlines set their prices is they kind of signal each other. One airline will raise the prices a little bit, and right now, if one airline does it, we've got 4 other airlines that may or may not raise their prices.
Yep.
If one of those 4 doesn't raise their prices, the guy that stuck his neck out and tried to raise the prices brings his prices back. Now we're going to be down to one airline puts their price increase out, and we only have 3 airlines which can say, oh, wait a second, we don't want to raise our prices, and keep prices under control. So I think that especially as the caller from South Carolina said, and I used to live down there in Charleston, South Carolina, you really see what happens when you don't have good competition from low-fare airlines. Today, they have Southwest in there, and the prices to Charleston have come down. And so it's changed the dynamic. But without competition, consumers are going to end up on the short end of the stick.
Ben, how do you avoid a stick-it-to-them pricing dynamic here when there are fewer players?
Well, you know, it's it will be interesting to watch, you know, but we have seen since the merger of Delta and Northwest and with United and Continental, there have been, you know, airfares are down 15% in $1995 since 1995, and even adjusted for inflation since 2006. So we have actually not seen a huge spike in prices nationally. Of course, some markets such as Charleston, they were high until Independence Air came in, which could perhaps be the worst idea in the history of modern airline experiments. So I think that was pretty much doomed to fail. It was nice they took a chance on Charleston, but let's remember they shut their doors and inconvenienced thousands of people with forward tickets because they couldn't make their business model work. And I think that at least kind of hints to the real problem here. Do we want these things to be kind of public utilities where their obligation is to carry people at a reasonable cost, or are we going to let these airlines be businesses and find a way to make money? And since 2001, they have collectively lost not billions, but tens of billions of dollars. And, you know, the argument from the airlines is that this merger consolidates the industry to a number of players that the public can actually support with the amount that they're willing to spend.
I'm trying to read between the lines there. I mean, we'll have 4 carriers after this carrying 70% of the U.S. market. So when you say that they've lost tens of billions and you've got to get to something sustainable, are you essentially saying Americans, heads up, we're going to have higher airfares generally, and that's what it's going to take to have viable big airlines?
Well, it's a possibility, but I think that the argument that I see is that it actually eliminates the flip side of that. You're going to see, you know, Independence Air, I flew them when they were based here in Washington many years ago. I bought a ticket to California from Dulles to San Francisco for $119 round trip. I don't think you have to have a finance degree or background to understand you're not going to make money with those kinds of fares. I think what the airlines are arguing now is that this stabilizes the industry with an amount of stable players that you're not going to have these irrational price sales anymore, where you're pricing the product so far below what the cost of the product actually is that you're getting yourselves in trouble. And as far as the consolidation, I know we talked about some numbers early in the show about how, for example, U.S. Airways in America will have 92% of the flights in Charlotte.
Yep.
That sounds bad, except you consider U.S. Airways already has 90%. So a lot of these numbers that we're seeing, they're already baked into the system in most, if not all, of the markets.
Charlie, how about it? Get a little stability in here. You know, people have seen some pretty low airfares over time now and then, and sometimes collapse follows. What about it?
Well, I think that one of the big lies that we get over and over again are that airfares have gone down all the time. Back in about 2008, American Airlines did a very interesting thing. One of their firsts. They were the first major airline to start charging for baggage. Mm-hmm. They started to take their airfare, quote unquote, apart. And all of a sudden, now if you wanted, before, if you flew round trip somewhere, that included two bags. Now if you fly round trip, you have to pay $130 extra.
Yeah.
If you want to get a seat reservation, it costs you anywhere from $35 to $90 to get your seat reservation. If you want to call an operator and speak to someone on the telephone, another $25. If you want a blanket or a pillow, that'll be $15. I mean, all of these airfare studies don't take into account the dramatic increase in fees. The fees are the only reason that the airlines right now are making money. In effect, they've raised their airfares.
I do want to interrupt, Charlie. The numbers I cited do include, did incorporate the bag fees and the decline from 1995. So they were lumped in, although some of these other fees, such as seat reservation fees and such, were not included. But so they have been accounted for, at least in some part. But the fees are a tricky situation.
Right. Fees are also an area where we can bring competition back into the airlines that regulators seem to be wringing out of it. If consumers could say, I'm flying with my wife and two kids, we're going to have four carry-on bags and two check bags, and we'd like to sit all together across in one row.
Yeah.
How much will it cost me to fly from Washington to Orlando and then push a button and compare across airlines? Wouldn't that be a wonderful thing?
That would be great.
We can't do that today because the airlines refuse to disclose the fees to the big central reservation system so that they can put that kind of a service together.
Could the FAA require that?
The airlines don't want
competition. Or could somebody require that on behalf of consumers?
We are working on that right now. There's a rulemaking coming out the end of May, but it's been a process that's been worked on now for more than 3 years. Hopefully, by the end of this year, something might happen. And this merger might be the straw that breaks the camel's back. Perhaps we're going to get some sort of a backlash to provide other ways that Americans can actually compare costs across airlines.
Where would that leverage be brought to bear, Charlie? Through Congress or through some federal regulatory?
It's through the Department of Transportation and through what they call a rulemaking. They make the regulations that control how airline tickets are sold and what we see when we go into the central reservation systems. And that kind of material is exactly what's being debated right now.
Boy, that would sure be great, because maybe they've had their backs against the wall of bankruptcy and all the rest, but it has felt pretty abusive traveling out there sometimes. If we're going to have this huge consolidation, Ben, as a traveler, you'd hope some of that sort of abusive cult kind of climate would go away.
Well, that is true, and I think it is important to say that a lot of these online travel agencies lack the ability to compare fares, which is something the airlines have screamed bloody murder over, so that does also cut both ways. They would actually like to be able to display their fees in order to upsell the passenger in these products, and they say the online travel agencies just aren't capable. They lack the technology to do these comparisons.
I don't know who really wants to be transparent here. We're looking at the big merger of American Airlines and U.S. Airways. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the merger of American Airlines and U.S. Airways, the creation of the world's biggest airline, the huge consolidation of U.S. air carriers in recent years, and what it means for flying, for schedules, for routes around the country and beyond, for you. Ben Mutzebaugh is with us from USA Today, aviation editor there and editor of the Today in the Sky blog at usatoday.com. Charlie Leoka is with us. He's a director of the Consumer Travel Alliance. We're at 1-800-423-8255. 855-212-8255. Let's get a call from Newport News, Virginia. Deborah, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Reason that maybe I didn't explain my question correctly to your screener, I was wondering, part of the cost that is causing these airlines to go into bankruptcy, maybe just one little thing, is why do they have so many planes at the airports going to one single destination? For example, the airport that I would probably use if I was going anywhere would be Norfolk International Airport. At one time when I was there, probably about a year or so ago, they had six planes in the concourse going to Washington, D.C.
Well, maybe you're filling them up. I mean, I don't know, Deborah, we'll ask, but I have to say I haven't been on a flight lately that hasn't been full to the gills. Ben, what about the population of planes headed out to a single destination?
Well, you know, it's everyone would love to have a nonstop flight from where they live. You know, even my family asks, why can't I get a nonstop flight from Harrisburg to Seattle? And, hey, that would be great, wouldn't it?
Yes.
But, you know, I'll tell you, that's how these airlines, most of them, that's, you know, it's not profitable enough to do that. You have to ask yourself how many people are going from point A to point B, and chances are the answer is probably not enough for a daily flight unless you have these hubs, which is this whole network that the airlines have set up. And in the case of Norfolk, it's probably somewhat unique to that metropolitan area. A lot of the airlines that serve Norfolk have their hubs or focus cities, Southwest in Baltimore, Washington, U.S. Airways at Washington Reagan National, and United at Washington Dulles. So if you're at that airport in any given time, you might see three flights all about ready to take off to those airports all at once, because that's where each of those airlines' respective hubs are. So in particular, that's the answer to that question from Norfolk. But you know, airplanes are fuller, and I think that was a trend that was going to continue regardless of whether there was this merger or not. And, you know, we could probably do a whole show on the lack of middle seats these days, but that's just the new norm in flying, not just here in the United States, but really in Europe as well, as the airlines face higher fuel costs. You know, when fuel was $20 or $30 a barrel, you could afford all of these planes flying with empty seats, and now the airlines have just really had to figure out ways to make the planes fuller, and that's been in part by reducing capacity and in part by being creative with pricing, and that's just, I think we're not going to see any change in that over the next decade.
Of course, for passengers, it does go to the quality of the experience. A lot of skepticism online here, Charlie. Sarah writes, it's not like service can get much worse. Luke says, fewer companies does not equal better anything for people. Tony says, all companies want to monopolize. The government's not trying to stop it. But then you've got Albert. He says, Charlie, having flown over 1.5 million lifetime miles on American, he's looking forward to it, to the route diversity that they'll get. He says, as long as we have three major carriers, United, Delta, American, I don't see how there's a monopoly issue. New entrants to our market, such as Virgin America, show there's room for a properly capitalized new entrant. What do you say, Charlie?
Well, first of all, now that we're down to only three major network carriers, if we leave out Southwest domestically, consumers are faced with the classic case of an oligopoly, where these three carriers now can basically set prices. There are a lot of ways that you can compete, and one of the ways you compete is on capacity. And if you read a lot of the news reports today, they say that the airlines have reached capacity discipline. That means that they can have fuller flights. That means that they can raise their prices when they need to. I had an opportunity to sit down with the executives out at U.S. Airways in Phoenix, and they have said for the first time they have the ability to pass on increases of fuel costs onto their passengers. They're not losing money anymore. In fact, U.S. Airways made more money than ever in the history of their company during this past year. So I think that what we're looking at is we're showing that you don't have to have control the number of airlines. We don't need to have mergers in order to have good operations. And a case in point is, look back at Southwest. Here's an airline who's broken all the rules of the legacy carriers year after year after year. Mm-hmm. And the only thing they do is make money. And now they fly more domestic passengers than any airline, because they're giving people what they want: good, solid customer service, no change fees, free baggage, and at a fair price. And the airlines which are having trouble of these fancy-dancy airlines who have business class and first class and this and that and all these fancy frequent flyer models. It's not working. The definition of madness is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome. Guess what? Since 2000, we had 10 major network airlines in America. Now we're down to 3. And they're using exactly the same reasons for this merger that they did for the first merger.
What about in this new scene that's emerging here, Charlie? What about new entrants? Our writer online there says, look, Virgin America came in. You've got JetBlue out there and others. Will there still be room with this 3-plus Southwest for new airlines to come in and shake things up?
I think that there will be, and I think that this is going to be part of the merger discussions. The Consumer Travel Alliance will be active with the Department of Justice, with the Department of Transportation. And one of the things we're trying to do is make sure that there will be room for new entrants at the airports. We need to make sure that we have the number of slots in Washington, D.C. cut back so that we don't have it controlled by American and U.S. Airways. We need to look at JFK. We need to look at LaGuardia, where there are capacity controls to make sure that there's room for smaller competitors.
Let's go to Sandy in Newton, Massachusetts. Sandy, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Just looking back to the time when there was the privilege and the pleasure of flying, now it's more like a bad bus ride. And I know psychologically I've been prepared for a while to pay more and fly less just to have an improved quality of flying experience. And my question is what, as the prices go up, what is the chance of improving the product as opposed to just letting the prices go up to a point that's sustainable for the airlines but has the same poor product?
Yeah, sustainable or even nicely profitable. Ben, is there an incentive out there for, you know, to turn air travel into something other than that bus ride that Sandy describes?
You know, I think there is, and that's kind of what we're all hoping for, right? And you know, I think the one airline to look as an example of this is the Delta Northwest merger. I think by all accounts, I mean, when they merged, Northwest, I think, may have unquestionably been the worst airline of all of the majors in terms of service and of attitude and just across the board. Today, Delta is probably offering the best service, the best in-flight experience, and even at the airports. They're building a brand new terminal at JFK Airport in New York. They've built a new international terminal that is really an amazing facility in Atlanta. So they are putting a lot of this money back into reinvesting it in their product. And the service is just really has really become much, much better than it used to be. In fact, I would call it an industry-leading product, not by leaps and bounds, but it's an example of how it can go well. United Continental is a bit of a mixed bag so far, but maybe the jury's still out on that. They've probably got the worst of the integration problems behind them, which Delta Northwest did not have many of. So, you know, maybe we will see the same thing at United as well, but I think you can look to Delta as an example of how a merger could make an airline better. And for the American U.S. Airways flyers, keep your fingers crossed that they can pull off the same result.
Let's hope. Charlie, here's a listener who writes online, we're moving back to more like it was in the 1960s. Few choices and no incentives for airlines to cut ticket prices. Do you agree? But might we at least get a more pleasurable experience if that happens?
Well, I think that we're going to still have incentives to keep prices reasonable. The problem right now is that we're just not going to have as much competition to keep prices lower. If we go back to the last question, one of the examples of an airline being turned around and going from being an airline that you almost didn't want to get on to being an airline that you didn't mind was U.S. Airways. When Doug Parker took over U.S. Airways, I don't know if you remember back about 5 years ago when they had pictures of all of the luggage piled up in Philadelphia.
Yes, I do.
Never going to anywhere.
Right.
The aircraft were in terrible shape and so on. And Doug Parker and Scott Kirby, who was his president, and another guy named Robert Isholm, who was like a turnaround specialist, came in. And these guys, they did a masterful job of taking an airline, which was kind of falling apart, and making it work. If you get onto a U.S. Airways flight right now, everything works. The lights work, the seat recline works, the tray tables are normally clean and they work. They've done a real good job of taking care of the little things. And I hope that they carry that on when it comes to American Airlines. I have to give them that kudo. They really are if any good for consumers comes out of this, it's because we're going to have a really good management team at the hub of an airline that really has dedicated, talented, effective, and experienced workers who need a good leader to let them really shine.
Well, let's hope.
There's a good part there.
Yeah, let's hope. Patricia in Aiken, South Carolina. Patricia, you're on the air.
I worked for 15-plus years for Delta in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
And at that time, you chose an airline because they had the best service or you liked them the best. You didn't go charge by, you didn't tip by fares. The fares were regulated. And then along comes 1978 with deregulation. And then everybody's cutting this and cutting that. Employee pay scale went way down to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
The older ones of us were grandfathered in, thankfully for me. But
yep.
Along with those cuts came cuts in service and lower fares and lower fares and lower fares. And while it might have been good temporarily for the public to get lower fares and to shop around with 15 different people,
yep.
Inevitably it led to the downfall of many, many airlines. And I'm happy to see Delta getting back into the customer comes first. Great customer service brings people back, and it leads to profitability. And I just want to say that to all the people who worked in the 70s, 80s, you know what I'm talking about.
Patricia, I appreciate your call. Charlie, what about deregulation? How do you look at it overall? And does consolidation, in effect, bring back something of the dynamic of the regulated era?
I don't think so. You've got to remember that the people who wanted to have deregulation more than anyone back in, I guess it was back in 78, was the airlines. They were constricted. They couldn't do what they needed to do. They couldn't change with changing flight patterns and demand. And so now they have that. So we really don't want to go back to the days of regulation and re-regulating the airlines. I think that as we move forward, we need to find ways to make sure that the consumer voice is not lost, that the power of the pocketbook is not lost by having too much consolidation. And I think that we're going to end up with a good airline. This whole episode that we're going through right now and the experience we're going through, I think will strengthen the airline system. It's going to bring out a lot of discussions about consumer service and about competition. And I think we're going to come out on the other side better off, all in all, philosophically, than we were. I'm not happy with the lack of competition, but I think that we're going to find other ways to bring competition into the system.
Richard in Farmington, Connecticut. Richard, thanks for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Basically, I've been in the retail travel business for over 40 years. I've watched airlines come and go. I've watched them cry about their profits. I've watched them go bankrupt and lay their debt on to everyone involved. The fallacy of today, and even the gentleman you're talking to, airfares are the highest they've ever been in history. People forget, and what the public should be outraged about, is airfares are extremely high. The airlines have so many other venues that they're making money from besides baggage and food, excessive $150 change fees on airline tickets. They all have their own credit cards that they make a percentage from. The airlines have nothing to cry about. But who should be crying about is the public, because the public is being charged too much for what they're getting. And don't tell me people like to say, well, you know, by 1960 standards, airfares are such and such. Well, it's not 1960. I'm paying $4 for fuel. So don't compare everything the way it is. The airfares are too high, and the airlines just need to run their operations better.
Richard, our time is short, but you're in the biz. Ben, how do you stack that up against your observation that they're not higher, if I heard you correctly?
No, that is actually... That's just incorrect. Adjusted for inflation, tickets today cost less than they even in the 90s, and that even includes a fair amount of bag fees, although we can quibble on some of the details of that. But passengers are paying less today to travel than they have at any time in in history, really, this decade.
So what's it going to take to be a savvy traveler in this consolidated period right in front of us, Ben? Is it going to be different? How are you going to get the best deal when there are fewer players?
Well, you know, it depends on what's most important to you. If you want nicer service, you have to be willing to pay $30, $50, $60 more. If you just want the best fare, you need a good internet connection and the ability to click on the fare that's a dollar less than the flight next to the one you're booking on the display screen. I hate to boil it down to such simple terms, but that's really what it comes down to.
Charlie, is that easy price comparison going to be some kind of break on higher fares?
Well, before we can have true price comparison, we need to have disclosure of the full cost of traveling.
Yes.
It needs to include bags you're going to carry, seat reservations, and so on. So until we get the airlines to come up and disclose all of these fees, we're going to be in bad shape. And just one quick comment about airfares. People go, oh, airfares are lower than they are today. I don't know if any of us remember what a personal computer cost 20 years ago. But technology changes and the world changes. And it doesn't mean that prices have to go up forever. They can go down. And there's good reasons that we're paying less for airfares today than we were in the past, because technology has allowed them to put more people into planes. We can now have one pilot.
Fewer airlines. We're out of time. Charlie Leoka with the Consumer Travel Alliance. Ben at USA Today, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.